do you remember you and Deckel playing Rob Cassidy and I at the US Open one year, and losing my mind because Cassidy wouldn't stop dinking down the line and Deckel earned.
I played atrociously, like one of the worst.
I was like, we've got this.
This dude can't make a shot. So basically I was just like, Deckel, I can't speed up. I can't drive. I can't counter. I can't do anything. I'm just going to dink cross court with Rob Cassidy forever. And he will freak out and he will go up the line. He's like, okay, all right, well, I'll earn it when he goes up the line. And I was like, please do that because I can't hit the ball in otherwise.
I've never felt so helpless on a pickleball court.
Even like after the 13th exact same pattern, Cassidy is still bewildered that he's getting earned. Like, what's going on here? I was like, Cassidy, that's the 13th time it's happened. You can't have that look on your face after
that. Looks at the ref like, kitchen, right? Yeah. Kitchen. I need challenge. Just absolute bewilderment.
Because you know why? Why? Because it feels right.
It feels right. Legendary.
Got to do it, Adam, because if I don't do it, who's going to do it, you know?
Hey, that's how it is for some things in life, buddy, you know?
You just gotta take the proverbial bull by the horns, if you will.
That's right. I'll admit I've never been the best at that, but occasionally I feel inspired.
Oh, on things you care about, Adam, you will do it.
Occasionally inspired. The bull
like,
will
if
be
you
taken
need
by
to find horns. If you need to find an IPA at 4 p.m., you will find it.
I will find it. It's true. Yeah. So sometimes it's more of a need than a luxury, you know, just as, especially with a little toddler running around the house, you know?
I thought you were going to say, you know, not 4 PM, 12 PM, but you did say it's a need. So it's,
okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. So you're talking about 12 PM afternoon, not midnight, because
correct. Yes.
I am no longer a midnight drinker that.
You're
I'm
an early
asleep
guy.
For 2 hours. I'm asleep for 2 hours at 12. So
that's okay. What's little AJ's schedule? What time does he sleep?
He naps from 1 to 3, and he, in theory, we like to put him down at 8:30, but that turns into more like 9:30 often. So,
So 2 hour nap during the day, and then how long does he sleep through the night? Does he sleep through the night?
It's pretty good now, but he was late. Like, a lot of kids start sleeping through much earlier than he did. He's been a bit of a pain in that regard, but it's getting pretty good lately. So maybe sleeps all the way through 5 of 7 days of the week, something like that. Yeah.
So like 9:30 to or 8:30 to like 6:30 later?
Yeah, somewhere between 6 and 7:30, all depending. Yeah.
All depending on how much he ran about the day before.
That's right. And he really needs and wants his mother in that first hour of the morning. So occasionally dad gets to sleep in, and that's nice. So
does he want dad to put him down, or does he want mom to put him down?
He needs me to put him down for his nap.
Got it.
Because
you're the nap dad. Yeah.
He cares less about me. So when he falls asleep in my arms and I go to put him down, like, him moving away from me is not that big of a deal. But if she's in the same situation and tries to put him down, he freaks out because mom is putting him down. But dad is kind of whatever. And so I'm the nap guy.
Yeah. What other nice roles do you play? Like, do you feed him, or what's that situation?
Yeah. Well, I'm dad by myself for several hours.
But he doesn't care. He's like, is there anything super particular about other than getting put down?
And this is how it is for basically all kids. They're worse for their mother.
Yeah.
Like that's their main comfort. So if they're going to have negative feelings or negative reactions, it's often with the mother, not the babysitter or the dad. So that works out nicely for me. I mean, he's a champ. Like, he's a champ for the most part. But he will be in A-double-S for his mom at times.
Yeah. And you get a little, break. You're down in Orlando now for MLP.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Down in Orlando, had the team, all six players came out. So we're getting some touches and some warm up in before the event. We play on Thursday, Miami Pickleball Club. And on Friday, we only have two matches for this one. Friday, the home team, the Orlando Squeeze. So, all 16 premier teams will be here, for this event. And, yeah, it's pretty intense. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, how are you guys approaching the six-player situation? Are you guys doing it as, like, you have your four core players and then kind of two subs that are good to throw into practice? Or, like, what's the role of kind of the two sub players?
I mean, they're basically filling in. Not all teams bring them. You're not required to bring them to the events. We did, and we're going to give the option to the players who will not be in the lineup moving forward, whether to come to an event or stay. So it's a big mix of those players showing up. So if you,
but what if somebody gets hurt?
If somebody gets hurt, then there are on site alternates.
What's the why are we doing that though? That was the whole point of having the extra players.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. So so that's where it's at from that regard. And you have to basically, the away team at 8 p.m. the night before competition has to put in their top four players. For that match the following day, and then the home team gets a 2-hour window up until 10 p.m. to react if they want to change their possible roster choices on the away team's choices for their top four.
Got it.
So, yeah, so that's definitely a new wrinkle, and putting that in, and it is a bit unfortunate that you can't really like plug and play or have a single specialist if you are one of the top two men and top two women for that particular match, you will play that whole match. So you will play gender, you will play mixed, and you will play the Dream Breaker. So you can't like have a single specialist or a mixed double specialist and play all of your players throughout the three disciplines. Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? My initial reaction is like, I'm not a big fan of that. I think not. Like, to me, it's like almost negating having the two extra players on your team if one, they're not required to be there. It's like a baseball team traveling to an event, right? If like, if they don't have their bench players, or like a relief pitcher, then, you can just use the one that's local to the place. I don't know. It kind of negates having the extra players. I know they had a bunch of players on, that were signed that they needed to like get to work and without having extra teams. Like I get that, but I would like to have seen like just in terms of like the strategy and flexibility to see like, maybe somebody's great at men's doubles, not at mix or vice versa, or singles. But what's your take on that? My initial take is obviously not great, but
no, I would like the flexibility too. Yeah. So to have a single specialist possibly on your, it gives you, I think it's more strategic with how you construct your roster. If you have that ability, I mean, there's plenty of like Colin Johns, right side men specialists or someone who struggles a little bit in men's, but has that great athleticism and movement, it can be more of a force and mixed, I do wish you had more flexibility on plugging and playing and having some specialists among your roster, but that's not the situation we're in. So,
but Adam, also it's not the situation we're in right now because rules do change in MLP.
they do. So
who knows what's going to happen next event.
Yeah, I'm refreshing it every day to see if anything new is on there.
Yeah, you have to.
And you do have, and I will bring up with this six person rosters, three men, three women, you do have that steal chance. So there's two waiver wire periods. And the first one, we have this event here in Orlando, then we have one in Columbus. And so that is going to be an interesting thing that we've never had before where you have to solidify your top four, and that third man and that third woman are available to be picked up from other teams if those other teams are willing to throw one of their top four players into the player pool. So there's going to be some strategic, I mean, every time a rule changes, there's always like little edges you can find or little ways to manipulate within the rules. And so it's going to be interesting to see what the teams do when we do have this waiver wire period after the second MLP event in Columbus.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a nice wrinkle that will bring in some, there's some really good fifth, sixth players that could very well step in. And maybe somebody's not playing well at the time and you're okay to drop them. So if they drop into the player pool, they're off that team essentially, right? Like full on just, yeah, it's not just for the event.
Yeah. So basically the thought process behind it is to get all of the top talent in the top four. So if there's just a really studly guy or girl in that third spot, and then there's a team that is struggling, we don't want that person sitting on the bench. We want them playing for another team. So, you know, this is, I mean, it's the same, it's a similar situation with the PPA and some of the rules there. It's just like, it's just so new and so fresh. So they make a rule, UPA makes a rule, and then like the players kind of like push back and find ways to exploit it. Same thing in MLP, the teams, and then it just kind of goes back and forth until it settles and, you know, never going to be perfect, but this is kind of the way it works here. So we'll see how this new waiver wire rule, if it's complete chaos, if it works smoothly, who knows? But I like the idea of it.
I will say, Adam, I've been impressed just being as, you know, I've been removed from MLP for a minute now, having taken that buyout. But I feel like the diehards like are still very much into it. You know, we had that break in MLP with the merger situation that happened, and people were like, you know, is MLP going to be okay after that? Was that too long of a kind of a lull? Did it lose momentum? That kind of thing. And it feels like with the fans that were already familiar with it, that it's it seems to me to be as strong as ever. Like, you know, you have everybody's talking about it, commenting on it, seems to be engaged. I wonder if it's like a bit complicated in terms of new fans coming in and watching and understanding kind of all the nuances, because we got to find that balance of making it easy enough. This was always the argument with scoring. We need to make it easy enough for somebody coming in to watch it for the first time to really understand how it works, while also having kind of the fun wrinkles to it that you're talking about with like the steals and stuff like that. I just wonder if it's conducive to a casual viewer that's coming in to watch it for the first time.
Right. No. I understand that. I get what you're saying, and I think really the main thing for that is consistency.
Yeah.
So once we have that back and forth, you know, league changes the rules, teams, and then we find like a pretty good solid middle ground, and they stay the same for years, hopefully, then I think that really helps the situation. But yeah, when they do switch, or teams are players are rotating amongst teams, or the rules aren't just fully solidified, then I do think it is a bit more difficult to follow, but I think it's just one of the growing pains that has to happen to get this team format to have the right rules and regulations.
And I don't even necessarily think it's like consistency. That's you're absolutely correct. That's the first thing that comes to mind for me. But I don't necessarily think it's the consistency in terms of keeping the same rules or scoring or format or team format. I think it's consistency to me and scheduling almost, and like time of year, where the events are going to be. Like if it's year after year that we know MLP is going to happen from April to July or something, and it's going to be just MLP, and that's like what fans can look forward to, and they can kind of gear up. It's like baseball season, right? It's like, you know, you're kind of following spring training. What are the moves being made? You know, the season starts, then you're tracking it and you're into it until it's game, you know, 94, and then you're just like, season's never ending.
but that's true. And they have done that. They made it kind of a summer season. So I think that is a step in the right direction. And to
have to hold it though.
Right. I agree. And also hold it. And then they do have the home teams hosting the events, which I think puts a little pressure on the home team to have a good event.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, Rob, as a fan, you'd be like, oh, the Orlando Squeeze, they put on a great tournament, and they have one every year in Orlando. Totally. I can go to that one every year. Or the Columbus Sliders, they host so well. And then maybe even some of the surrounding states where people will travel to that event because they know it's going to be quality and it's consistently in the same spot. So I agree with that completely. And I think that that is important.
Yeah, I love that too. I like that. I like putting the onus on the home team to host and put a great event on, because it does, like, one, you're going to see who, like, which teams are serious in terms of really creating a spectacle and making it really fun. And like, if you really crush it in year one with putting on a great event, then you're going to have demand in year two,
right?
Year three. Like fans are going to be like, well, you got to do this again. And that's going to help create some consistency in terms of putting some pressure on, let's not change the format again.
And a lot of these owners have assets and ability to make these events good, and they have egos. And they want their, you know, I mean, these are like pretty heavy hitting people in business, and you know, and they don't want to put on a weak event. So I think when you add all of the things they have at their disposal, plus they really want to show up, maybe somebody else, or put on a good event, that can only be positive for the league. So I think it's going to be a great year, and I'm excited for the summer.
Put my money on, if I'm just thinking about ownership groups, I'll put some solid money on the Chaffetz organization putting on a really, really great event in St. Louis. That I think is going to be a, I think I saw they're doing it at an arena, like indoors, which is going to be super dope. Going to have great viewership, like, you know, and, you know, that's their city, you know, especially university there. So I think that's going to be really, that'd be one that's, you know, exciting to go to, exciting to watch. And I know they're doing a lot of things as an organization. Like, I, you know, they hired Andrew Haynes, and I talked to him a little bit about doing a retreat type, like hosting a retreat on their behalf. So they're thinking outside the box a little bit and looking at how to build the fan base and how to create a business out of the team as well, which is really cool. So I'm hoping, I don't have a ton of insight into what other teams are doing, but I just know they're really putting a good foot forward in terms of trying to build out a solid franchise.
Yep, no doubt. I agree with that sentiment about them for sure. So St. Louis Shock have always been on point with how they handle their business. And they got a pretty good squad on the court too. So that also is not surprising.
Selkirk Cork Strike, lightweight, breathable.
Seamless. So
what I do like is the all one color. It's a nice style.
Yeah, it looks good.
These are available.
Rob, 6 months sole guarantee too, which is super important for me because I'm an explosive athlete and a high-end mover, world-class foot speed and footwork. So sometimes I just blow through the soles. I like to tie my shoes really tight, and sometimes I get the loop of the tie and I slide on that and it rips, and I hate it when that happens. Seems to be my left big toe area, just sole gone. So to have that for 6 months is something that I need. Rob. Are you playing some pickleball, and are you traveling internationally for some pickleball?
We'll use playing pickleball very loosely. No, I'm playing better than I would have thought or hoped, or like the first couple times I went out, man, like it was really tough, like on the core, like any kind of rotation was tough, but it feels like, you know, with a strong Pilates regimen as I have, Adam, that all things are possible through Pilates. No, it's been like Molly teaches Pilates. We have a studio really close to here, so she'll take me in and like run me through some exercises to try to build some strength in the core. And when I say strength in the core, like if you like looked at me, you'd be like, "There's no strength in the core." So it's like looks like mush. But I think there's some stuff. I think there's some stuff underneath that layer. There's got to be something down there.
Yeah.
But it's been nice to be on court. More than anything, it's just been nice to be on court and like running around and playing. It's really like renewed my sense of joy and love for the game. Just I felt like I was so cooped up watching a lot of pickleball, but going out and like just playing, trying to hit drops, trying to move a little bit, trying to get into the flow of like, I just missed it, dude. I don't know if you ever get that feeling of like getting back on court and like running around and playing, getting like a deep sweat in and just like, you know, hitting some nice shots, feeling crisp, feeling like you still got it a little bit. And then it just makes you love it a little bit more. It's similar to golf, right? You hit a couple good shots, you're like, this is the best sport in the world. And then you like hit, you know, a drive that goes 3 feet left, and you're like, ah, the sport is so stupid. So yeah. it's kind of that situation where I'm loving being on court, hitting some balls. I think maybe there's no expectation, no pressure I'm putting on myself. So I'm just like truly just enjoying it, not expecting to hit perfect shots, not expecting to be clean and crisp. And that's allowed me to like just have fun with it. It's like every time I go play now, it's like, man, this is like, I just literally, it felt like I went to like the playground for 2 hours and just played as a kid. Like it's super.
Yeah. Like, and it was like at the beginning.
Yeah.
My first year, it was pure joy. Not that the rest of it wasn't, but there were some expectations it turned into like, this is for real. I actually can do this as a job. And, you know, hobby to job is a different mindset. And you need every so often to reintroduce yourself to the joy of the game, because it is a pretty damn cool game. And
such a fun game.
It really is. So, that's good to hear. And,
I think a little bit of like I haven't, this sounds bad for somebody that hosts a podcast talking about pro pickleball, but I've kind of like not been as in tune with like what's happening, you know. I haven't been watching quite as much, haven't been paying attention to the news and headlines quite as much. And like, even just like releasing my like kind of grip on the pro side of things has allowed me to just enjoy playing a little bit more. I think that it sounds odd, but it does feel like there's a piece of that that has attributed to me enjoying it more, which is odd but interesting.
Yeah. So where are you going next? Like, do you have a schedule of when you're going to play a tournament?
Yeah. So I am teaching a camp. So I have a good relationship with the guys over at Global Sports in Mumbai. They're putting on an event in Dubai, May 8th to 11th. And it better be indoors, right? Dubai in May, it's going to be super hot, but, indoors, I believe it's at like a pickle/padel facility, which is pretty cool. They have some good connections in Dubai. I know UV's got a home there, and family's going to be there, which is cool. So I'm playing that May 8th to 11th. Right now, I'm only playing men's doubles with a kid from Mumbai, Vanchik Kupadia, I believe is how you say his last name, but. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool full circle. Like the first time I went to Mumbai to teach with Global was October 2023, and you know, did like basically a week-long camp with some of their best players. Vanchik was there, and we did an MLP style event, which basically tracking whoever had the most points, and Vanchik ended up winning, so he won my paddle at the time. So kind of pretty cool, like very first experience going to Mumbai, and Vanchik won the paddle, and now I'm playing men's doubles with him at an event in Dubai, you know, look at it 2 years later. So really cool to see like where India's come and how far, like how much better these guys have gotten too. Like they've all raised each other's game, and it's really great. And then I'm teaching a clinic or a camp May 5th to 7th in Dubai right ahead of it. So looking forward to, like, I'm enjoying that more too. Like I'm enjoying the instructional side of things, even just like creating content on my own, not like teaching camps or clinics or lessons, but like just talking to the camera and talking about pickle. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. That's not a shocking full circle pickleball story. There's a lot of those out there amongst the pros and the amateurs. So that's pretty legit.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, I've seen a crazy amount of, like, talking about pickleball going international, there's been a lot of clips I've seen of, like, Andre, Tyson, all these guys going to Vietnam and Malaysia, I believe, and getting picked up in Rolls Royces and Maybachs and all kinds of crazy stuff. And, like, looking like paparazzi at the airport and, like, a little absurd. And I felt a little bit of that, because, like, when I went to Vietnam and Quang and his brother and dad were there, like it was like, I mean, he was like swarmed the whole time. Yeah, it was absurd how like famous Q is in Vietnam. It's like just like a swarm of people following him, like walking around, and it's just it's interesting culture over there.
Yeah, well, from wooden paddles at the rec center with 80-year-olds to superstar status for some of these pickleball players, it's pretty dang cool, man. And I heard Vietnam is ridiculous. Like it is popping over there in a big way. Of course,
everywhere.
Yeah. Which is just the best. So.
And I might be heading directly there after Dubai. I told Shelby Bates I'd play mixed with her, but I have to find a men's partner. I don't know if you want to go to Vietnam last minute, Adam, but I'll play some men's with you in Vietnam.
I don't think I could squeeze it in.
Don't say no so fast. Just think about it. Let me talk to Prof. Get a little AJ in tow. Get a little chest carrier that he can sit on me. And let me take it from here, Adam.
That's who you're going to have to talk to, because it's not AJ? Up to me. It's up to Prof and AJ.
I'll see what I can do. But yeah, so might go to Vietnam. They're putting on an event. Guy Andy from, it's called DJoy Pickleball in Vietnam. He's opening a new 26 court facility, I believe it is. And this is kind of the inaugural tournament. It's the same organizer that hosted it when I went over there the end of last year, which was a super well-run tournament. Really did a really, really good job. This was at a 12 court facility, but so he went from a 12 court. He's opening a new 26 court, and you're absolutely right, Adam. It's absolutely absurd what's happening in Vietnam in terms of pickleball. And we were all kind of speculating, is it going to be China? Is it going to be, and I just saw a bunch of players went to China and played a tournament. I was talking to Jack Foster. He was just over there, and it's just, dude, Asia's here. It's here. We talked about it for a while. Like when Asia gets in, it's going to be full blast. And I think we're about to be liftoff status.
Let's go. The more the merrier, as far as I'm concerned. Just totally. the whole PB landscape, one, it starts popping somewhere, everybody wins. So that's great to hear. Rob, yesterday at the Hard Eights practice, I hadn't done this drill in a while, and we worked it in to the beginning of practice, and it's very simple, but it's just amazing, and it is absolutely my favorite drill, and it's just 2-on-1s.
Yeah.
So, I prefer the bet. You can do it full court, but I really like to do it just at the kitchen line. We're sitting three right-handers. You have the two right-side players dinking cross-court, and then you have the left-side player kind of waiting for a speed-up or an attack coming.
100%.
And it's so good for mixing up your spots, mixing up your paces, and finding speed-ups. And, of course, you can rotate it around any way that you want to. But even some of our guys and girls were just like, man, after that drill, we played standard regular games, and I was just seeing it like a beach ball. After that, just to
drop the beach ball, Adam. You can't do that.
Yeah,
brings back bad memories. Stop it,
Pat Smith.
Stop it,
Tell the story.
Oh no, I think this had to be at the U.S. Open, and it was mixed. And I think he was playing with Stratman. I was playing with Vivian David, maybe, and it was a tight one. Viv and I lost, and at the end, you know, Pat, just such a nice guy, just comes up. Daps me up. It's like, oh, bro. So, you know, I was just seeing it like a beach ball out there. I'm like, you just beat me, dude. I'm so down right now. I'm obviously really sad and bummed. And you can't just tell me how easily you're seeing the ball. Like, it's just so disrespectful. But so he said it in such a nice, kind, earnest way that I was just like, okay, sure.
The story's no good if it's not Pat Smith.
Oh, exactly.
Because you know he meant nothing by it. He was just trying to say something to comfort you after you lost. And that's what he comes up with, is that right there.
Oh, I was just seeing it like a beach ball out there.
Oh, thanks, Pat.
Like, I couldn't get a third down, bro. So I'm glad you saw it. I was seeing it like a freaking marble.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Great story. One of my favorites.
But yes, sorry, that was a little interjection, but continue on. Sorry.
No, just the 2-on-1. I just think it's so fantastic. And just, you know, with some of the heavy counterattacks and some of the paddle technology, just finding a rhythm on changing paces and changing spots on your attack locations. And there's just no better way to do that than a 2-on-1 drill, all three players at the kitchen line. And also from a counterattack perspective. So it works for the person on the right side firing away to all the spots, and it helps the left side person slide left, slide right, find different ways and different styles to counterattack the pickleball, which is extremely important. And you just get when you put it into a drill form and aren't just doing it in a match, you get so many more reps in those situations, and you can really find patterns and spots that you like to go much quicker in that drill format than you can just playing games.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of times where you do the one-on-one head up, straight up the line on the dink attack, try to find the spot to like attack, but it's not nearly as efficient and as true to the game and point simulation as you would do if you're going cross court first, right? Because you're not going to dink head on very often, just one after another. You're going to go cross a lot. You're going to go middle. And it's a different attack when you're attacking a ball out of the air, changing the direction of it versus going right back where it came from. Like, it's a different shot. Taking a speed up out of the air, changing direction on somebody's body versus it coming right from the same spot. So when I lived down in Estero, and Deco was living at Andy's house, if you remember this, and Viv was living at home, and Jan Poppy had a store. Dude, this is all Declan and Viv and I did. Like, all we did was two-on-ones. We had, most of the time, it was just the three of us. We sometimes had a decent fourth come in, but it was us doing this exact two-on-one drill nonstop from the kitchen and just rotating. And I do attribute it to, like, why Viv got so good at countering, and especially sliding right and hitting, like, cranking that two-handed backhand. Like, she got so good at that because we just drilled that nonstop.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that slide to find the two-handed backhand, and then she started going scorpion with the forehand too. And that, I guarantee that was developed from that drill, you know?
Yeah,
and 100%. And as you said, Rob, the 1v1 straight ahead, fine. You know, that's a good drill. But the two-on-ones is a great drill. And and I think it's important. One other note for any amateurs at home that want to try this out or do it. If you are, so you have the right side player lined up with the left side player, and then the left side player has his partner on the right. If you are that player on the right, just mix in some dead dinks or mix in some more aggressive dinks to give that player opportunities to be aggressive. It makes the drill flow much better than just hitting unattackable dinks throughout the entirety of it. So, sure, don't just pop up everything, but give that player something to work with so that they can work on their attacks and that left side player next to you can work on their counters. It's absolutely huge.
Yeah, so people say three is a bad number for pickleball. It's actually a great number, Adam. And it's like, you're gonna get so much more out of a three-person session than you would just playing. Like, right now, it feels good for me to just play. I've drilled very little. But, like, getting the face-level fitness back of, like, the air and the, you know, I just haven't done anything for 8 weeks, basically. So trying to get the legs back up to speed. And you can only do that when you're, like, really moving and trying to get to the kitchen line after a return.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you said I haven't done anything for 8 weeks. I was like, well, me either. I don't have anything else to say about it.
So, you're like, same.
I go up and down with my activity, you know, and I'm in a lull right now. So what else can I say about it?
Well, you gotta get out there and show them how to have baby soft hands, Adam.
Yeah, that's right. Downy, you can't earn any Downy soft. That's a fact.
You can. It's funny. It's fun when they try, though. It's fun when they try.
Yeah, I mean, you can try. It ain't gonna work, though.
Adam, one last throwback. Do you remember you and Deckel playing Rob Cassidy and I at the U.S. Open 1 year, and losing my mind because
oh god,
Cassidy wouldn't stop dinking down the line, and Deckel earned. I mean, you guys. I think it was a game to 15, but I think you guys won 13 of the points off Deckel's earnies.
Yeah, and like, I played atrociously. Like, one of the worst.
Yes, you did. I was like, we've got this. This Adam can't hit a ball. Like, that's the worst I've ever seen you play.
This dude can't make a shot. So basically, I was just like, Deckel, I can't speed up. I can't drive. I can't counter. I can't do anything. I'm just going to dink cross court with Rob Cassidy forever. And he will freak out, and he will go up the line on the fourth or the third, or maybe even the first ball. And
Deckel
was like, okay. He's like, okay, all right, well, I'll earn you it when he goes up the line. And I was like, please do that, because I can't hit the ball in otherwise.
That was like, I wish that was recorded somewhere, because it was just the absurdity of it. I, like, you and I were just like, I just remember, like, there's, I've never felt so helpless on a pickleball court.
Yeah. And like, even the, like, after the 13th exact same pattern and exact same result, Cassidy is still, like, bewildered that he's getting Ernie'd. Like, the look on his face after he gets Ernie'd, he's just like, what's going on here? I was like, Cassidy, that's the 13th time it's happened. You can't have that look on your face after
it looks at the ref like, kitchen, right? Yeah. Kitchen. No, like, I need challenge. Like... Yeah, just absolute bewilderment.
Yeah, no, I definitely, I don't remember all the matches, but I remember that one. Perfect.
Oh, good little journey down memory lane. We good? Oh, yeah. Let's let you get back out to MLP, Adam, and get whipping these young pups into shape, you know?
Got to get them going, man. Got to get them going.
If anybody's going to do it, it's going to be you.
Let's go.